I sure hope Newell is out somewhere basking in this amazing weather with his day off. I'm Dave Cohen, glad to be here, and so happy that Mike Haas is joining us on the live line, the voice of your New Orleans Saints, as the Saints get ready to take on the hated Dirty Birds Sunday at noon in Atlanta. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Dave. Thanks very much. And so, people that woke up this morning, I can't speak to the North Shore because I woke up on the South Shore. If you wondered, well, what was it like in Irvine, California for a month? That's it. Every day, exactly like you woke up this morning, crystal clear blue skies, those temperatures,
low
and it never really
humidity.
Got warmer. So that was it.
Yeah, we were all very jealous of the time that you got to spend out there with the Saints in training camp in that amazing West Coast weather. But at least we're going to enjoy a taste of it this weekend. A lot of people wondering, though, about just the team getting to Atlanta. Is we have a tropical storm moving out of Atlanta right now after it came ashore as a hurricane in Florida. What are you hearing about in terms of travel plans? Has anything been changed, or is the team going to be able to follow its normal routine?
As of now, there have been no substantial changes of any kind of as normal. I mean, it's, I guess, because they're really on the back end of it from you know, the Atlanta perspective, and they were doing high water rescues earlier in the morning. And so I think there's more about an assessment there, but there's been no real changes. Believe me, I've been all over Atlanta's website, and their training headquarters is in Flowery Branch, which is actually northeast of Atlanta. But there's nothing on their website about if they had to impact practice. It really impacted practices and stuff in Tampa yesterday and today more than Atlanta, as far as I can tell. So it's business as usual, at least for now, I guess, as they kind of go through their assessment process.
So you expect the Saints to leave sometime tomorrow, head to Atlanta, spend the night there, and then play the game on Sunday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nothing like that has changed. And again, I don't know only that what, you know, you can kind of find out of what the situation is in Atlanta. It was more of a flooding situation as opposed to a wind. And I'm sure there are power outages, but it's not the, I don't think it's going to be the widespread, just from what I've watched from a power outage standpoint, as opposed to the flooding. A lot of the stuff that they knew they could change, like Major League Baseball had a game Wednesday and Thursday, moved that to a doubleheader on Monday, some colleges rescheduled games, but there's been nothing of any, schedule changes for anything that I've seen for this game anywhere. So kind of, check with however you're getting there, flying or driving. But, because if you're going to go I-10, it means you're going to go between Tallahassee, depending on how you want to go, take different routes. But you just got to be careful as you're driving east as to what you'll encounter.
In terms of fans trying to get to the game, yeah. And we have seen a number of flight cancellations, obviously, yesterday and today. And with Atlanta being such a huge hub, we'll have to wait and see how long it takes to get everything back to normal once Helene has moved out and they're able to make sure that it is safe to fly in and out and that they have the power situation and the flooding situation under control. So that aside, hopefully it's business as usual at noon on Sunday for the Saints. Mike, you think we're going to see the Saints we saw last week or the Saints we saw the first 2 weeks on the field in Atlanta?
Well, that's clearly the question, right? I mean, it's probably somewhere in between. Were they 91 points in the first two games, 12 in week three? There's no magic potion like Philadelphia had a really good defensive scheme, stacked the line. But their defensive tackles, Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter, are two of the best in the game. And so you just can't go, all right, well, that's what they did, and we'll do that, Atlanta's defense, and be successful. You kind of are who you are. You don't make massive kind of changes. But Dennis Allen's already said that, yeah, he expects to see some of that kind of stacking the line with Atlanta just because that's what worked. And so this is not from a Saints standpoint, what they're going to do. They're going to try to stop the run and make you throw out of it, or either be successful running the football or throw to work your way out of it, make them pay for stacking the line. And you're right. You don't know. I think probably offensively, they were enormously efficient and executed everything that they wanted to in weeks one and two and didn't in week three, but yet still offensively scored the touchdown late to take the lead. hold on at the end. So I'm not sure. These games are always pretty gritty, pretty, you know, tightly contested. There may be a touchdown towards the end that makes the score 7 or 10, something like that, one side or the other. But for the most part, man, it's about, you know, turnovers, who can kind of really make the most of turnovers if they get them, both teams. You know, Atlanta has struggled mightily on third down and in the red zone, and the Saints have been pretty proficient on third down and the red zone. Just, you know, didn't move the ball very well last week against Philly. But, you know, from a red zone and third down standpoint, the Saints just got to keep doing what they're doing, because they've been, you know, 63% on third down. That's second best in the NFL. And then the red zone, 75%. That's third best in the NFL. So you just, you know, you got to put whatever happened with Philadelphia behind, you know, flush that out, and just this is such a big one, and both teams are kind of facing similar problems, you know, from an offensive line standpoint, center and another offensive lineman, a tackle for them, Cesar Ruiz, a guard, but so neither he nor Caleb McGarry, the tackle for Atlanta, have practiced this week. We'll have to wait and see about today, and both centers, Drew Dahlman and Eric McCoy, on IR. So it's kind of weird that you have two offensive linemen injured for,
and particularly
for this
at
game.
The center and position, which is so wildly important. But
right.
I guess you hope that last week the Saints go into a game and lose their center on the first drive. Hopefully Derek Carr now, and having a week to work with his now new center going forward, they'll be better on the same page and they'll be able to better work together. You think that'll be as much as of a factor, or will the offensive line be a little better this week than they were last week?
It's hard to say, because I'm not really 100% sure as to the route they're going to go, because you have a ton of options from an interior line standpoint. Like last week, they moved Lucas Patrick over to center and used Ali Udo in the guard position. Then they brought up Shane Lemieux, who can play center and guard, from the practice squad to the active roster, signed Chris Reed to the practice squad, another guard. So the question is, do you, because you were able to do it all earlier this week, that Shane got brought up Tuesday, you know, is he your center? Keep Lucas Patrick at guard, and then maybe put Udo at right guard. I mean, you know, now you're kind of impacting two positions as opposed to maybe three if you move Patrick to center. So they've got some options.
Shane Lemieux is a veteran. Who was taking the majority of the snaps at center in practice?
We don't know. That's not real. It's not training camp, right? And so, Dennis plays his cards very close to the vest, as well he should.
The fans may want to know, but we don't want the Falcons to know.
Right. And so I'm not 100% sure as to what they'll do. He says they're both getting some, they're all getting some snaps. It's very much in flux, but he's not going to play his hand with that. But he does, you know, you do have some options. It's just about how many positions do we want to impact. And we don't, you know, for some reason, I would be surprised if Ruiz practiced any today. And even if he did, it would be limited at best. And then, you know, I do not think we'll see Caesar on Sunday, but, you know, who knows?
Got to imagine Derek Carr has a lot to say about who he's going to be getting the ball from, and had a lot of input into that decision of who's going to be playing center for him, huh?
Yeah, certainly think so. But he's done everybody, right? He took Sunday from Lucas Patrick, Shane Lemieux, ton of time in training camp. So, yeah, they've all done it. They've all taken snaps. You get Nick Saldivari back. He was hurt earlier. He's been back. So you kind of, you know, you have, and this is the new offensive lineman, right? I mean, 10 years ago, you didn't have so many of your linemen who played multiple positions. Now it's almost a mandatory that your guard and center, you know, both guards can play all the positions and play center. So you got to have that flexibility, and the Saints do. It's tough from a depth standpoint. It's tough from an Eric McCoy standpoint and Ruiz. I mean, they've been just, you know, stalwarts there on the right side of the line and center.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things working against the Saints last week against the Eagles and why they weren't able to be as productive, not even close to as productive. Also a step up probably in defensive talent. How much do you think Taysom Hill being out of the lineup contributed also, though, to the Saints' lack of production in facing the Eagles? And do you think he'll be back Sunday in Atlanta? And will that make a big difference?
I think it was impactful that he was not there because he just does so many things. It's hard to look at his stats and go, well, you know, if you take away his stats, he's had 8 runs for 53 yards. He was, you know, so 2 catches for 2 yards, but he just does so much, right? He does so much
and
from a fullback standpoint, a blocking standpoint. I can assure you, when it's 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1, as the Saints faced in Philadelphia, where they got stopped on the Alvin Kamara 4th down run, that's Taysom, right? It's not Alvin taking the wildcat on 3rd and 1 and then Alvin getting the carry on 4th and 1. That is definition of Taysom time. So it was impactful on those 2 plays, and I he's been practicing all week. Fully expect him to be playing on Sunday, and it makes a difference because he does so much. He's one of those guys that you have to account for when he's on the field. Where is he? Why is he over there? So just the impact that you had didn't have to account
for
him.
Yeah, just when he's in the huddle, they don't know where the hell he's going to line up when he comes out of the huddle.
Right, just knowing he's in the huddle is half the battle. Then when he comes out, because he can be the halfback or the fullback or the tight end or the H-back, and, you know, just kind of having that, when you take that out, that enables Philly to play more of that, all right, we're going to go 6-1 on the front line, and just you beat us because you ain't got Taysom, you know, and Jamal Williams hasn't really run it a ton since the first couple of weeks, so you become a little bit more predictable. But, you know, they weren't able to capitalize on some of the events. They couldn't capitalize on the fumble recovery. They couldn't capitalize on the blocked punt. And when you get opportunities to kind of
they had 3 right. huge plays that if the offense could have right. scored on any one of those turnovers or big plays, the result would have been totally different.
Right, because you're not always going to play your best football, and that would have been a crucial opportunity to say, we didn't play our best football, but we still came out with a W, and that would have changed the narrative, you know, immensely. And for the Saints,
3-0, yeah,
right. And the narrative would be, I mean, think of it, you know, we kind of forget that Monday night game with Atlanta and Philadelphia. I mean, if Kirk Cousins doesn't have that magic drive where he was 5 of 6 and leads him down for a touchdown, they're 0-3, and they are screaming bloody murder for a change of quarterback. So just that one drive has changed the narrative for both teams, or at least, you know, from an Atlanta standpoint offensively. But, it's the Falcons and the Saints. You know, you can't throw out the stats or the records because it's just so early, right? So it's week 4. Then they play Atlanta again week 10. And then that's it from the NFC South, week 10, except for one game with Tampa Bay in January of 2025. So you play the bulk of your NFC South schedule early. I don't really care for it much, but it's the way it is. So you're going to know week 4 and week 10, you're done with Atlanta.
Talking with Mike Haas, the voice of the Saints, as it is week 4, and we're not done with Atlanta. We got to go to Atlanta and beat the Falcons. Saints, Falcons, noon on Sunday. The odds makers, last time I looked, had the Saints as 1.5-point underdogs. Does that sound logical to you?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the Falcons are kind of hard to really pinpoint off from an offensive standpoint. They've struggled. I mean, they're 1-2 and, you know, very, very competitive and had the ball late against Kansas City. But they've only scored, they've averaged 16 points a game, right? And on 3rd down, they are 6 of 27. 6 of 27. That's 29th in the league. And on the red zone, they're 4 of 9. So they just have not really been able to put it together offensively, despite having, you know, all the talent that they do with Pitts and London and Bijan Robinson, and really Darnell Moody, the Tulane, former Tulane receiver, has been really the bigger big play guy, but they just haven't been able to do it. They're -2 with a turnover differential, just, you know, 4 turnovers, and have struggled offensively on 3rd down, 4th down, red zone. So, but they've got such good athletes. I mean, all across the board with Robinson, Mooney, Lundy, Kyle Pitts. So it's going to be tough. Even though their stats say that they've struggled, you still got to account for all those people I just talked about, including Tyler Rozier, Avery Williams. I mean, you just, you know, it is what it is.
All right, so as usual, we expect a tight, good game between the Saints and the Falcons Sunday in Atlanta. Mike Haas will have the call with color analyst Deuce McAllister. Mike, see if Deuce can make some more predictions because he's been clairvoyant lately. He says what's going to happen, and boom, in the next play it happens. So let's maybe get him to predict some really good stuff for the Saints.
I will. We're going to have fans in the pro day 4-6. So we're going to the big discussion that we have to decide, is it going to be Nostradamus or Nostradualimus? So that's those. We have to get to the bottom of this. We've got to get the nickname settled on
my,
this. But
my
you're
vote,
right. He has been clairvoyant.
My vote is for Nostradamus. Say it again.
Nostradamus?
Nostradamus, yes. That's my.
You got it. I'll put you down.
All right.
You got it.
Mike, we look forward to hearing you and Deuce today at 4 o'clock and Sunday at noon. And hopefully the Saints come back from Atlanta with a victory and sole possession of first place in the NFC South. Thank you for joining us here on WWL on the Newell Norman Show.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Talk to you all soon.
Go find some time to enjoy this great weather, all right?
You bet.
Mike Haas here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. We can talk about the Saints all you want. We're opening up the lunchtime buffet now here on the Newell Norman Show. For the rest of the hour, you can talk about anything you want. Bring it your potluck to the buffet. And we're also going to get a presidential historian to join us to talk about how much do presidents impact your life in the United States? How much impact does one president have in 4 years or 8 years on your life? And do you think that the president who wins the election in November is going to dramatically make your life better or worse? We'll continue that conversation. Anything else you want to talk about, call me and text me now, 504-260-1870 here on WWL. It's 12:30 on your Friday with some of the best weather we've had in a long, long time. I hope you get out and enjoy it this weekend. What I don't enjoy is the messages we've been hearing from both diehard Republicans and diehard Democrats, way to the right and way to the left, that if their opponent wins the presidential election in November, that essentially the country is going to be ruined, that our lives are going to be destroyed if the wrong person wins. They say it will end America as we know it. We've been hearing this from both camps. That message seems to me to be more prevalent than ever, at least as I can recall, and I've covered a lot of presidential elections. So I wanted to get a presidential historian on to join us to tell us, can the person elected to be president of the United States really make our lives dramatically better or dramatically worse? And is this rhetoric unusual in a presidential race? And so we've been lucky enough to get award-winning, best-selling presidential historian, author, and fellow Alexis Coe to join us here on WWL. Hi, Alexis.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Glad you could take some time out to join us because the election right around the corner coming up in November, and the rhetoric is getting more and more dramatic, not only from the candidates, but from their supporters and their opponents. So simply, let's start with this very basic question. Can, whether it's Harris or Trump that wins this election, can they dramatically make our lives better or make our lives worse?
Well, first, to get to your earlier point, which I think is excellent, partisanship is as old as this country itself. And from the very beginning, ahead of each election, except for ones in which George Washington was elected, the country was completely mystified and terrified by their options as they disagreed and thought that the opposition, whoever they didn't support, would surely lead in the end times, the end of the American experiment. I think, at least for my whole adult life, I've heard reactions like, I'm moving to Canada. But what I do know, and what we do know from recent history, is who the president is affects us in the short term and the long term. In the long term, the reason we usually wait to rank presidents is we need to see what their policies do. And we do know that certain policies work, certain policies don't. That takes time. But then there are crises like the COVID-19 pandemic. That showed us what happens when we have a leader who might not necessarily be best suited for the role at that time.
So I guess the answer, we don't always know how much a president will impact our lives when we elect them. We know their philosophies. We know their platforms. We know where they stand on the issues that are addressed. But you're right. We don't know what they're going to have to face as president. You know, a lot of people have been calling us and texting us because we've been discussing this for a few hours now here on the show and saying, you know, that right now the inflation that we've been dealing with, particularly at grocery stores and restaurants, and trying to point fingers at either President Biden or President Trump for causing that inflation and saying that that's how their lives have been directly impacted. But they disagree on whose fault it is and who actually caused the inflation or made the inflation worse.
Yes, I think that's a feeling that is prevalent. You don't really know who to blame. But again, I think I'm a biographer of George Washington, John Kennedy. I study all the presidents. I'm a senior fellow at New America think tank where I think about all of them. And here's what I do know. Whenever I rank the presidents in C-SPAN's ranking, you hear, you know, top five presidents. I always note there's no perfect president. I've never met a perfect person, never met a perfect president. But we do, and they make mistakes. George Washington's response to the Whiskey Rebellion, which was allegedly and ironically a bunch of non-land-owning whiskey distilleries and growers, they grow the grain, rebelling against being taxed without representation. They didn't own land, so they couldn't vote, so they weren't represented, and they didn't have cash. They were an agrarian society that traded things. But he rode out with the entire army and then found there was no one there rebelling. It was quite embarrassing. So that's a big mistake, and we think of George Washington as being almost too perfect to be real. And then the way I like to think about it, and I think it's useful because it takes partisanship out of the equation. I used to really dislike the way people would talk about the founders or the presidents in like our founding fathers. They would parentify them, right? It seemed like very strange to me. And then eventually I came around to this idea as being useful because you want, you know, the kind of parent who is going to take care in a crisis, who's going to be a steady hand, who will be fair and equal to all his or her children. But you, at the same time, you don't want one that demands a lot in return and sort of dominates your life so that you can't live it. There are all these ways in which we can think about the presidents in different ways that takes us out of this very, you know, I would say it's always, partisanship has always been bad, but there is a particular and worrisome, almost violent tinge to these conversations.
And of course, the president being the commander in chief has impact on many people's lives who either choose to or get drafted into our armed forces. And we've seen that over history. And clearly the decisions a president makes in terms of starting a war, entering a war, sending soldiers to war, that impacts many people and extremely directly, particularly when they lose their lives or suffer horrible injuries or other impacts from war. But I've been asking our listeners how presidents have impacted their lives personally beyond their role as commander in chief and in terms of the military forces. A lot of people pointed to President Lincoln freeing the slaves. Some people pointed to FDR creating Social Security. Obviously, both of those things were long before we were alive. And so I started trying to think, what has a president done in my lifetime that really had a profound impact on my life? And really, the best I could come up with was President Trump lowered my taxes and President Obama, by pushing and getting Obamacare passed, had a dramatic impact on my family for the pre-existing conditions being required to be covered by insurance and by allowing children to stay on their parents' insurance to 26. But that was the best I could come up with in my life. Am I missing something? And are presidents in the modern era, have they had dramatic impact on our personal lives beyond the philosophical and, you know, policy kinds of decisions they make that may over time impact us as individuals?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of subtle. It's hard, right? Because presidents don't pass bills, but they are the de facto leader of their party, and they directly, you know, impact how policy is made. We also have to really account for how much ethics and personality plays a role in who is president. And so, you know, to get away from these very specific policies, although we could talk about Reagan after he was shot pushing the Brady Bill, writing an op-ed in the New York Times and pushing for gun control. But I think it's also worthwhile to look at something like Watergate with Nixon. That is when we first saw a real sharp uptick in the cynicism the electorate feels towards the president. And I think that was significant because we see any time that there's a real break between the way a president professes to be or the way that we think a president should be, and their performance, we see issues from the electorate, and we see this divisiveness rise. We have another example, not just from Nixon, so we'll do both parties, right? We have a Republican, now we'll do a Democrat, Bill Clinton. We have this projection of a family man with his, you know, wife by his side, and his Chelsea Clinton at the time was young and in the White House. I think she started out in middle school. And of course, he had affairs and ones that really inappropriately wielded power over a young intern. And so we have that also really directly impacting lives because they are, you know, for better or worse, are not only commander-in-chief, but are sort of moralizer-in-chief. And those conversations trickle down. We see them. They're in our living rooms. They're having, they're forcing these conversations in our families.
That's an interesting take, and I hadn't really considered that. I don't know that my opinions or thoughts on cheating on your spouse changed as a result of President Clinton's behavior or not, but I can see where that you can argue that would have an impact on the psyche of the nation and could change the way individuals think about things in general, whether it was Nixon, which predates me, or Clinton. I was thinking more intangible kind of ways they either impacted my life in what I can or cannot do, or impacted my bank account in terms of what I do or do not pay in taxes. And I just get the feeling that in the modern era, particularly since we limit presidents to two terms now, they have less and less ability, and with gridlock on Capitol Hill most recently, less and less ability to directly impact our lives. And it just makes me wonder, is my life really going to change dramatically for the better or for the worse, whether Donald Trump or Kamala Harris wins the election?
I think I have to push back on that one quite dramatically because due to the appointments, you know, Obama was not a Republican-dominated Congress, did not allow Obama to appoint a Supreme Court justice. And of course, Trump appointed two. And as a result, Roe versus Wade was shot down. And we see women throughout the country being forced to carry and you know, girls who would not be described as women being forced to carry children to term, not, you know, who were sometimes a result of rape or incest. We've heard accounts in the news of women bleeding out in parking lots. And so I think individual lives are definitely impacted by a lot of the sort of chess game in the presidency.
Yeah, and I think you can point to other historic decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court legalizing gay marriage, which then you can then track back those justices and which president they were appointed by. And so, yes, presidents clearly do. And I'm not saying no president has ever impacted anybody's life. That I would never argue that, because clearly in the short term and the long term, presidents do have impact. We have presidents for a reason, and they do wield a great amount of power as leader of the United States and really of the free world. But I guess in a back around and end around kind of way, I'm just questioning how much my life particularly, I mean, I just don't see it will be immediately ruined or immediately made dramatically better based on the outcome of this election. And I welcome arguments against that.
Well, I think that's, you know, that's the hope, right? That's the hope for all of us. It's just unfortunately not the position that we all find ourselves in. I think it's subtle. It can be something as small as the president not necessarily pushing vaccinations for younger children as quickly as older. It could be bigger, as we just talked about. But I do think what you're sort of pinpointing here, maybe what's underlining this is underlying it is not necessarily these privileged positions. Oh, that doesn't really affect me, and this cherry picking of what might or might not happen and how it will affect our individual lives based on our circumstances that are financial, social, all of these things. I think it's more what is the panic here? Will this really on the second day radically change? Well, I have to say, and this is going to sound partisan, but remember that I am a presidential historian, and so not only I put country before party, I put constitution before party, and I'm at a bipartisan think tank. But we only have one candidate who is saying that, and I'm not saying the other one is perfect or anywhere near it, but we have one candidate who's saying that they're going to be a dictator, that they're going to be a despot on day one. That could dramatically change. And I'm not really expecting that this is just talk, because we've never had that kind of talk. It happens in other countries. And the thing that happens in those countries is if they had a democracy, it falls. A way of living is drastically changed. So I think that that is quite serious. So yes, I think that some of that incredible angst and anxiety around the election is justified. I'm not sure otherwise it is.
Alexis Koh, presidential historian, author, thank you so much for joining us. If people want to read more from you, how can they do that?
Well, there's a George Washington biography, You Never Forget Your First. I have a newsletter called Study Mary Kill, and they can find me generally online, writing all the time.
Alexis Koh, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your thoughts with us here on WWL. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. What do you think, folks? We've got the rest of this hour for your calls and texts at 504-260-1870. Do you really think who's elected president in the upcoming election in November will make your life dramatically better or dramatically worse? And do you think the rhetoric is more intense now than it has been for other elections in your lifetime? We'll take more of your calls and texts after this. Coming up in the news at 1 o'clock, a man accused of bribing Mayor Cantrell is now facing a new federal indictment. Randy Farrell allegedly bribed Cantrell so that she would fire an employee who was pushing for an investigation of him and his inspection business. We'll have more about this indictment and how it could impact the mayor coming up in the news in about 10 minutes here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. We're going to a lightning round. I'm going to give everybody 30 seconds to share a thought as we move forward here with the Newell Norman Show, and we're going to start with James. James, you're on. You got 30 seconds. Go.
Yes, sir. Real fast. I'm 81 years old, resident of home, my lifetime. I'm registered independent. Sir, Obama, beginning with him, he gave all of his liberal supporters all that they wanted. His vice president, senile Joe, with his border policy and his economic policy and shaming us as the leader of the free world, he destroyed America.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it. Mark, you've got 30 seconds. Go for it.
Yeah, I think that each of these presidential candidates has the ability to make our everyday lives better. I think every president does have the ability to make our lives better. And for that matter, every elected official in D.C. has that ability. Do they do it? No. Will they? No.
So, Mark, bottom line, do you think your life will be dramatically better or worse based on the outcome of the election in November?
No, I think that whoever wins is just going to maintain the same status quo that they constantly maintain.
Thank you, Mark. Donald, 30 seconds are yours in the lightning round. Go, Donald.
Listen, we were arguing about policy of which president was causing inflation, and it's the CEO greed. It's not necessarily the president and the policy.
Can the president make it better or worse?
Yeah, whatever president allows the CEO greed to continue like that, yeah, it's unabated.
Thank you, Donald. We saw crazy inflation both under Trump and Biden. So I don't know. Whose fault is inflation? I think you got a lot of fingers to point. James, thanks for calling. You got 30 seconds, James.
Hi, Dave. Thank you. Always good to hear you on the radio. Well,
thank you.
Trump promised to overturn Roe v. Wade. He appointed three radically conservative justices. They did. Look at the controversy, the havoc that it's created all over the country. Reproductive.
Oh, we didn't cut James off, but his phone cut him off. Sorry, James. David, 30 seconds are yours. Go.
The Civil Rights Act was passed under Lyndon Johnson. Richard Nixon allowed the Vietnam War to go further. Trump will allow Ukraine to lose the war, and we will have, unfortunately, Putin create havoc in Eastern Europe. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. And the last call in the lightning round, Bubbles, 30 seconds are yours. Go ahead, Bubbles.
Dave, I think that people need to stop using the terms like communism, socialism, Marxism, and what's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be a great deal of difference, but people throw those terms around like they're nothing, and they need to find out what that really means. My mother lived through Nazi Germany, and it was not pleasant, but it didn't just get there by accident. So I don't think it's going to make a great deal of difference who the president is.
Thank you, Bubbles. We appreciate it. And thank you for everyone in our lightning round. Y'all have influenced my opinion. I'll share my final thoughts right after this. So what I take away from our discussion today on how a particular president impacts individual lives is this. Every president of the United States absolutely can have a dramatic impact on my life and your life directly. I will absolutely agree with that sentiment that I've heard loud and clear from so many of you today. But I still maintain that in my lifetime, very few things that presidents have done have directly impacted me and my loved ones. Others have been directly impacted. But I think what it all comes back to, and the point I'd really like to leave on, is our lives will not be ruined if what you perceive as the wrong person wins the election, whether it's Harris or Trump. We will survive either way. Have a great weekend. Go Saints, go Tigers.